Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. With Air France, your journey to France begins when you set foot on the plane, starting with a complimentary glass of champagne in every class. And in business and la première, savor a five-course meal with cheese and wine and unique menus created by some of the greatest French chefs. Enjoy a taste of France before you arrive. Bon appétit. Elegance is a journey. Air France.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You want to get the most for your money. That's why more Mazda buyers choose Ramsey Mazda. Lease a new 2025 Mazda CX-5 all-wheel drive, just $229 a month, or buy and get 0.9% APR financing up to 36 months. Start shopping now at RamseyMazda.com. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda.
Call 833-853-2970 for details. Excludes tax, title, and registration. Zero security deposit. VIN S0555-242. MSRP 29990. Ends 3/31/25.
It is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. John Hancock is filling in. I'm Chris Ranji. Good to have you with us. And we go to the guest line this morning, and we talk to the mayor of Brentwood, David Dimmitt, who is visiting with us because State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman is proposing the complete removal of the Missouri grocery tax. And some people are not necessarily in favor of that. Mayor Dimmitt is with us to discuss, and we appreciate your time today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So there are 40 states, I believe, that do not have a grocery tax. Missouri is one of 10 that still does. Why do you think this is not necessarily a good idea?
Well, actually, I got to correct you on that. It's not 40. Historically, there's 30 states. Only 30 states have ever taxed groceries. So it's not as if we started with 50 and now we've pared it down. We've started with 30. That ever taxed groceries. And of those 30, 19 of those 30 still tax groceries in one form or the other, either at the state level or they allow the local municipalities to tax groceries. So Missouri's actually in the majority of the states that still do tax groceries.
So my understanding of this bill is it would prevent municipalities from instituting their own sales tax on groceries, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
So and you think that it should be left up to the local municipalities to do it if they want to?
Yeah, I do. The residents have already voted for those sales taxes. They're in support of it. So I'm not sure why we would take that away from them. And you got to keep in mind that the local municipalities are the entities that provide the services that we all count on every single day. Those are the services that touch our lives more so than anything in the state of Missouri or even the county for that matter. You know, if you like having the 911 phone answered, you can thank your local government. If you like having police patrol your neighborhood, thank your local government. If you like knowing that there's an ambulance that can be dispatched to your house within 2 minutes, you thank your local government. Streets paved, it's the local government. Sidewalks repaired, it's the local government. You want to have a place to go, a green space, to take your kids or your grandkids or just take a book and read on a beautiful day without having to drive an hour or hour and a half out of the city. Thank your local government. Those are all the services that we provide. The state doesn't provide those. And those come at cost. And the way that local government provides those, the revenue is through sales taxes primarily. And a portion of that is sales tax on food.
David Dimmitt is our guest. He is the mayor of Brentwood in St. Louis County. He's opposing the Senate bill that would do away with sales taxes on grocery purchases and diapers. The sales tax people don't quite get, but a portion of that is a tax that the state levies. So there's a state sales tax component, and then local governments levy a sales tax as well. And in St. Louis County, that's a very complicated situation. There's the point of sale cities. Brentwood, I'm assuming, is a point of sale city. You guys get to retain all of your sales tax?
We can retain a portion of it. Brentwood, if you go into a grocery store in Brentwood, the sales tax is going to be about 6.7%. 1.225 of that is the state of Missouri. 2% is Brentwood. And then the difference, the remainder, is St. Louis County sales tax.
Gotcha.
So we keep all 2%, and then there's 1% of the county sales tax that we get a portion of, because that's the pool tax.
Right. And you all, you've got your own local police department there in Brentwood, providing a number of municipal services. If this tax were to go away, what would the impact look like to citizens in Brentwood, and for that matter, other municipalities in the state?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not limited to the city of Brentwood. Every single municipality relies, as I said, heavily on sales tax, and a portion of that are taxes on groceries. So if you start talking about eliminating sales tax on groceries, it's going to have a massive effect on every single municipality across the state of Missouri. Brentwood, according to the Department of Revenue numbers, I think generates about $4.7 million from sales tax on the sale of groceries. That is about 16 to 17% of our total budget. So you might say, well, you cut your budget 16 to 17%. Well, we can't do that. We've got about a $30 million budget, and $7 million of that, right off the top, goes to service debt. Now, we can't cut 16 or 17% of our debt service. So we got to take that first $7 million to pay off our debt. So that leaves us with $23 million to find $4.7 million. And so then you start talking about heavy-duty cuts across the board. And, you know, when each police officer costs us, when you add in the benefits plus the cost of a patrol car, about $130,000. A fireman is about $98,000. And, you know, what we have left then is our public works department and our parks department. And how many, and since Brentwood, like all other municipalities, are a service provider, you provide services through people, your biggest expense is going to be payroll. So you start cutting people to decrease your payroll. How many people do you have to cut to recapture $4.7 million? You can't do it. You know, so we'd have to start looking at raising taxes, other taxes on residents. Right now, our residents don't pay for trash, recycling, or yard waste. That's the first thing we would do, start charging them. That would be about $40 a month expense to the residents. We would start collecting or assessing real estate taxes on residential property, which we don't currently do. That might be, you know, depending on the value of your house, you know, I don't know how much that would be a month, but it would not be an insignificant figure. When you compare those increases in expenses to your typical homeowner in Brentwood against the proposed or suggested savings of, you know, if you spend $1,000 a month on groceries at 6.7%, that's $67 in sales tax a month that you're spending on groceries. That's if you're spending $1,000 a month on groceries, which is a lot of food. But assuming that you do that, you're saving $67, but your expenses are going up on the other side, because Brentwood's got to start trying to close that gap. So at the end of the day, you end up spending more money by getting rid of the sales tax on groceries. And not only do you spend more money, we still aren't going to close the gap. So you still end up seeing a decrease in services.
Brentwood Mayor David Dimmitt is with us here on KMOX. So you sort of parsed this out. If this does go through, and it has bipartisan support, apparently. So, I mean, there have been people on both sides of the aisle who've wanted to do this for a while, going back years now. So if it does go through, I mean, do you have your plan already laid out beyond what you've told us here? What will happen, what you will do if this proposal does actually pass?
You know, Chris, you know, nobody likes to pay taxes. I get that. And it would be great if we didn't have to pay taxes. But we also like having services. So that's the way that you do it. And when this came up 2-3 years ago, I convened all of our staff, and we sat down. We started looking at how would we, first of all, what would the cost be to the city? I wanted the confirmation of that. And then I wanted to see how would we try to fill that hole. And so we have come up with ways to do it. And as I mentioned, the first thing we would do is residents who aren't paying right now for trash, recycling, and yard waste would do it. So they would see a monthly bill, you know, either collected through a real estate tax or through some other means. And then we would look at raising some taxes through some other ways. You know, we still have a quarter cent fire sales tax that we have not assessed. We would throw that out to the public and ask them to approve that. That would generate new revenue. But that would drive up the sales tax on non-food items. And how many times have we heard people say the sales tax is too high already? Well, we would have to add a quarter cent sales tax to try to fill that gap that is created by that loss of revenue. Again, we would start collecting the residential real estate tax. You know, if you live in Brentwood and some of the other communities in St. Louis County, if you look at the general fund on your real estate tax bill, you'll see zero. Those cities are not assessing that because they're financially healthy. But you take away a good portion of our revenue, we're going to have to start assessing that again.
What sort of support have you gotten?
Every single mayor I've talked to is absolutely opposed to eliminating this sales tax, if that's what you're talking about, the support.
Yeah, I'm wondering if,
yeah. We went down to Jeff City 2 weeks ago to testify in opposition to Senator Coleman's bill, and as we did last year, and there were more and more people showing up. There were more elected officials showing up at this committee hearing this year as opposed to the year before. And we had mayors from Wright City, I think a mayor from Marthasville, and they were telling stories that are even worse than what I was hearing from people in St. Louis. You know, they're saying their revenue, it would take a hit 28%. You know, and same thing, you know, they made infrastructure improvements. And the way that you do that is through issuing debt, and you pay that debt through sales taxes. And they said, you know, they've got $11 million in debt. You cut off that revenue source. How do they service that debt? For us, we issued $80 million in what are called certificates of participation to address flooding on a state highway, that'd be Manchester Road. You know, we wanted to keep Deer Creek off Manchester Road. But we dedicated and we indebted the city to the tune of $80 million. And the residents were in so support of that, they agreed to the passage of a half-cent economic development sales tax, which generates revenue, and that is dedicated solely to pay that debt. Now, you get rid of, you know, you hit that, and on our sales tax, our groceries are account for well over 25%, closer to 30%, I believe it is. All of a sudden, that revenue stream that is dedicated to pay our debt is gone. And it's not just us. It's other cities throughout the state of Missouri that have done the same thing. They have made long-term decisions about debt with the reasonable expectation that the revenue would continue to come in to service that debt. And now the state of Missouri is saying, we're going to take away that revenue that you expected to come in.
This is a proposal that is being considered this year, likely to be part of a larger bill of some kind, a larger tax bill. And the mayor of Brentwood, David Dimmitt, with us. We do appreciate your time. Thank you for talking with us about this today.
Thank you for your time.
John Hancock with me, Chris Ranji. This is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
March 11th, and it is the five-year anniversary of the COVID pandemic. Yay! We've got John Hancock in today for Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji, and it is a nice day today. It's a nice week.
Lovely day.
I could use it to be a little colder. Hmm. I like cold weather. I don't mind it. But 82.
It's a perfect day out there.
It is. If you like that spring weather sort of thing, today's your day.
Today is a very fine day.
I like fall weather. This, John, this week, 82 on Friday.
I know. I won't be here.
And then back to like the 60s and then 40s and whatever.
I go to Florida and it's 80 degrees at home. Isn't that just the way it
goes? Do you know, 1 year when I was living in Chicago, we had St. Patrick's Day. And I left town on St. Patrick's Day to go to Arizona for spring training.
Yeah.
And it was 80, I think like 82, 83 in Chicago, to Arizona, and it was like 60. It was freezing.
Huh.
For Arizona, it was cold.
Now, Chicago, they turn the lake green up there, right?
It's the river.
The river, whatever it
is. They dye the river green.
Yeah.
Did you know, also, little Chicago river history for you, they have reversed the flow. They did it a long time ago. They reversed the flow of the river because it used to go out into the lake
naturally.
They reversed it so it came back in. And that river actually heads south and eventually filters its way down here because there were the stockyards.
Right. Yeah.
Where all the cattle were getting slaughtered and there was just garbage that was going in the river. Their water source is out in the lake. And so all that crap was going out into the lake, and they thought, well, we can't have this.
Yeah.
So they sent it our way.
That's interesting.
Not nice of them, is it?
Huh. You ever take that agriculture or that agriculture?
Architecture
tour on the boat?
I have. We did a tourist day once.
It's fun. I've done that.
It's really nice. It is a great summer city.
It is.
I don't mind it in the winter. I
don't either.
That.
So we used to go there every year on our anniversary, which is December the 1st. And so you'd have the Magnificent Mile would be decked out for Christmas.
It's awesome.
It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
So, John, it's a thing that we have talked about quite a bit on this show when we have you guys on, you and Michael Kelly, on Fridays in the morning, that the state of Missouri is on the verge of assuming control of the St. Louis Police Department, and it passed a pretty heavy bipartisan vote yesterday in the Senate, a 27-5 vote in the Senate. It moves back to the House, and I believe it could happen today where it gets finalized. So it could happen as early as today. So it looks like we are moving closer to that. We might very well be, by the end of the day, knowing whether or not, for sure, Missouri will take over our police department here.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. And, you know, I don't think it's a panacea for everything that's wrong, but I think it will be helpful. I think it's significant that the police officers themselves favor this, whereas back in 2012, when local control passed at the polls, the police officers were in favor of local control at that time. So the fact that they've gone 180 on this tells you that the police do not feel like the current board has their backs. And so I think this will be helpful.
I will see. I don't know if there's going to be any material difference. I know the concerns raised have been that anybody who's on the board, there's got to be some accountability with them. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case, that there isn't. So the people who are, if things go wrong with the police department, you can't vote somebody out on the board. You know, they still get to keep their jobs. So I think that's kind of the concern here. Also, there's the issue of democracy that we allowed. St. Louis was allowed to choose for themselves what to do with the police department. That's what they chose to do. So going against that is sort of counter. It goes against, and Amy has made this point a bunch of times, that it goes against conservative principles, that you allow local control because that's the way it should be.
Yeah, but I would argue that there are competing conservative principles here. One of them is that police departments ought to be supported, funded, staffed, and appreciated. That's a conservative principle. And yeah, local control is also a conservative principle. They're in conflict here. And it's not like Jefferson City is going to be running this thing. The governor's going to appoint 4 St. Louis City residents to the board. And the mayor will also be on the board. And they're going to have a business non-voting board member, a business owner, that will be part of this police board, but they won't have a vote. You know, as I say, it's not a panacea, but it's a step in the right direction, I think. And it does open the door potentially for some real innovation in how you do policing. One of the things that is a struggle, I think, is the folks at the lowest end of the pay scale in police departments tend to be the folks that are on the street patrolling. And because your salary increases with, you know, with tenure, the folks at the top end of the pay scale tend to not be the folks on the street. They're in the white shirts. You need them, you know, the office folks in a police department. So how do you get around that? Because it's a pay scale and it's a negotiated, collectively bargained contract. So one of the ways that some places have gotten around it is paying hazard pay to the officers that are actually on the street to incent folks to join the department, that maybe that's something they'll consider here.
Yeah, and I think you might be able to attract more people to want to do the job. However, Robert Tracy, who is the police chief, has told us here on the show that they have done a pretty good job in trying to. It doesn't happen overnight, They have attracted people back into the St. Louis Police Department already prior to all this Missouri stuff. They have brought back some old officers who left.
Yes,
some people who had left the department, they have now come back. So things had been moving in a right direction. This seems entirely unnecessary. And I think it's largely political.
I think the governor is favorably disposed to Chief Tracy as well. We had him on a week or so ago, and he likes Chief Tracy. So. And
Tracy doesn't want this.
Right.
So, I mean, we'll see how it works out. But if you look to Kansas City, state control hasn't really done much for them. They are in a pretty bad spot, too, in terms of crime. John Hancock and Chris Ranji, when we come back, we're going to talk to Bernie Miklas. We'll talk some Cardinals, some sports with him next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
John Hancock sitting in for Amy Marks-Kors today, and the Bernie Miklas Report is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American standard heating and air conditioning dealer. I'm Chris Ranji, because no days off for me, except for Friday, but, and maybe Monday too.
Yeah, maybe.
And then probably Tuesday. At any rate, we bring in our guy Bernie Miklas, who is with us now. The Cardinals continue Grapefruit League play. They will play today just after 12 o'clock. Eric Fetty will start for them as they get ready for the regular season. And Bernie, before we get to baseball, first of all, hey, how's it going?
I'm doing groovy. Does groovy. Anyone use that word? Anyone use that term anymore?
I'll drop a groovy. I'll drop a groovy every once in a while.
Really?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We're bringing it back.
When you get well-seasoned like me and Bernie, you can get away with the groovy.
So John here, I feel like John skipped one whole generation. Like he just, I didn't think that he participated in any of the groovy stuff.
I was there, buddy.
You were there?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't doubt that about. Yeah, I fully believe that about Mr. Hancock. Absolutely.
So, Bernie, before we get to baseball stuff, it is conference tournament time. We just had the Missouri Valley tournament, which wrapped up here in St. Louis. Drake winning that conference tournament. They'll go to the big dance. We also have SIUE, which is reaching or has reached the NCAA tournament for the first time ever. I think that is just an awesome local story.
Well, it really is. And it's what, to me, it's the reason that makes the NCAA tournament so special, because you can't say, well, there's room for everybody. But in terms of, you know, practical experience, you know, every year there are, oh, I don't know, five or six teams, seven teams that are true Cinderella type teams. And it's either their first time in an NCAA tournament, or it's the first time in a very long time. And they just give that tournament, teams like SIUE, pardon me, they give the tournament just a really special charm. And you just love to see, you know, teams like that get into the dance, because, listen, it's usually going to come down to, the Final Four usually be, you know, teams that are in the top 10, 15 in the entire country. We know that, but man, you just love the possibility of David and his slingshot going in there to knock somebody off the way. Remember when UMBC?
Oh yeah,
Maryland, upset Baltimore. Number one.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
But I actually passed through there for about a semester. But anyway, UMBC knocked off Virginia, the top seed. You know, yep. Stuff like that. You just always want to dream like something like that can happen. But congratulations to everyone at SIUE.
It's a very cool thing for them. Meanwhile, we are waiting to see what will happen with SLU. They're going to play on Thursday. It's a game that we will have here on KMOX. They'll play the winner of Richmond and Davidson. That's Steph Curry's former school. So what do you think? Is there one of those teams that you would prefer they face in the first round?
To be honest with you, I haven't looked at it that far. I just know that SLU's been playing better. And listen, if the big three are getting it done, they would have a chance to at least get to the final. You know, I think SLU's a little bit of a sleeper pick in that tournament, because I just like I like their form as they go into the Atlantic 10 tournament. So it's going to be interesting, because obviously, you don't mean to say this, it's the only way they're going to make the tournament is if they have to win the conference tournament.
So again, Thursday, Atlantic 10 tournament, SLU will play. It's a 1 o'clock tip off. We will have the game here starting at 12:45 with the broadcast. So let's go ahead and shift to baseball. Cardinals, again, they continue their Grapefruit League play. Last time we talked, I'm certain that we got into, you know, those final roster spots. And that's kind of what's left here to decide for the rest of this month before the opener on March 27th, is figuring out how to shape up that back end of the roster. Is there somebody you think that is on this team right now that maybe we did not think of before spring started?
Well, I can't say, Ronge, that he's absolutely going to be on the team, but it would not be surprising to see Jose Barrero make the team. You know, he was the former top prospect of the Cincinnati Reds, and a lot of people thought he'd be a terrific player, but he hasn't been able to hit. However, he's very, very athletic, and he can the bonus with him is he's a right-handed bat, but he can play anywhere in the infield, basically, or at least third, shortstop, second, primarily shortstop. But he can also play center field. He can also help you out there. And I think the Cardinals are really impressed by his athleticism and his versatility. So yeah, he's definitely got a chance. Like Thomas Ejasi, you know, under normal circumstances, like if Arenado had been traded, Ejasi might have had a great chance to make the team coming out of camp. But I think he's going to have to wait, because I think you need him to get his at-bats every day down in Memphis until something opens up. So that's one guy. That's really the one I keep an eye on. Lucan Baker, for example, to me, I on good authority, but again, everyone can change their mind. You know, Lucan Baker's definitely on a club. The, you know, right-handed bat against left-handed pitchers and DH situations, perhaps, but also as a late inning threat against lefty relievers coming off the bench.
Looks like Victor Scott's gonna gonna get the starting nod in center field for the Cardinals. He had a really good spring, surprising some folks, and one of the few Cardinal batters that really has stood out so far in Jupiter. You expect him to be the Cardinals' opening day center fielder?
Well, he should be, especially if they want to have everyone believe that this is, as they call it, a, quote, runway season that leads to 2026. Scott represents their future, and he's got much, much higher upside than Ciani, much higher upside. And I would be, to call it a puzzling or a head-scratcher, that Victor Scott would not make the club, or, you know, would not be the primary center fielder. To me, it would just be bewildering to me. But I understand there's a difference of opinion in the organization. So we'll see. I think John Mozeliak, and if you heard him on with Kevin Wheeler on Sports on a Sunday morning this past Sunday, John Mozeliak is very, very up. I mean, up on Victor Scott. The manager may have a different view of this, so we'll see how this plays out. Because the manager loves Michael Ciani, even though Michael Ciani has never, not even in the minor leagues, has never hit at an above average level. Yeah. I've covered baseball a lot of time, long, long time. Every team I've covered, the manager always has like a fixation about somebody that the rest of us go like, okay, he plays really good defense, but huh. That you want him over Victor Scott? It just makes no sense to
like
me. But
Tony La Russa and Seth Maness back in the day. Remember that relationship? Hey, the starting staff is a little troubling. Some of the guys have looked pretty good. But Sonny Gray gets rocked again yesterday. It's too much to read into. I mean, it's spring training, right? So don't worry about it.
I never look at veterans. I'm talking about older veterans. I never look at them because they're always working on something. Their priority is not to like, well, I got to get out. You know, I got to pitch well today and not give up any runs. Sonny Gray's probably trying to shape up some pitches and things like that. I think the most interesting thing about the rotation, you know, Katie Wu of The Athletic has reported this, and she kind of doubled down on it today. You know, the last two rotation spots are going to come down to Pallante versus McGreevy.
Yep.
And that's another head scratcher. I simply don't understand this. Gentlemen, you know, Andre Pallante last year, he moved in the rotation on May the 29th. From that time to the end of the season. So we're talking about June, July, August, and the final month, 4 months. He not only had the best starting pitching ERA among Cardinals, but he had the 10th best starting pitching ERA in the National League from May 29th to the end of the season. And I'm sorry, he's got to fight for a rotation spot. I was not aware that the Cardinals had a bunch of Cy Young candidates in that rotation. Pardon the sarcasm, but I just don't understand the thought process down there sometimes.
Is it a motivational thing?
No, because I think Pallante is really geared up. And you remember the story, you know, last season, because he was never going to be a good major league reliever. Because he can't strike people out. But as a starting pitcher, that doesn't matter as much because he's got a great arsenal of pitches. He also had the highest ground ball rate in the National League last year. Anyway, but the story last year, this just shows you a little bit in behind the curtain stuff. When they sent him down after he was a relief pitcher and he was getting hammered, they sent him down to Memphis, and Pallante stopped in the office and said, listen, I have a request. I really do think my future is going to be as a starting pitcher. I think I'm just much more suited to a starting role. Can I go down to Memphis and can I work on that? Will you let me stretch out and be a starting pitcher? And they said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Here's the question. Why does the pitcher have to go to the team and say, you know what? I can be a good starting pitcher. I think that's where I'm at. I think that's where I'm at my best. And he came up and he proved it. He had the team's best ERA as a starting pitcher from May 29th to the end of the season. And, you know, but if Pallante hadn't spoken up, where would he be right now? He went from being a fringy reliever to a guy that was at least statistically their best starting pitcher once they put him in there. So the Cardinals, gosh, I don't know sometimes. I just don't know about, again, their thought process on some of these things.
It's interesting you bring that up because just yesterday I mentioned this to Kevin. On during the Glover show, usually teams, they try to exhaust all starting pitching possibilities first before they even think about putting you in the bullpen, right? They want to make sure that you can't start games before they stick you there, because you are infinitely more valuable to them if you can take starter innings. And I recall a situation with Chris Sale, who eventually won a Cy Young Award, who was pitching for the Sox, and they tried to put him in the bullpen because they had injury concerns with him. And he freaked out on them and said, "I am not going to the bullpen." And they said, "Okay, fine, you can continue to be a starter." Those kinds of examples, you rarely hear about them. It doesn't mean they don't happen, where a player has to talk the team into letting him start, but you don't hear about them that much.
Yeah, and that's why the Pallante thing is so strange, and yet he came through in a huge way for them, and yet now, instead of, you know, we're not talking about, you know, Miles Michaelis having a battle for a job or Steven Matz having a battle for a job. We're talking about the guy that had the best starting pitching ERA last year over the final 4 months. I don't know, you know. And listen, man, this is not a shot at Michael McGreevy, because if this was a true runway season, if the Cardinals are really good, would really back up what they said they were going to do, McGreevy and Pallante both would be in the rotation. But it doesn't. It seems like it's going to be one or the other, at least at the start of the season. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Well, Bernie Miklas, we will talk again on Thursday.
Everybody has to buy groceries in order to eat. Why can't we just double or triple the tax on taverns, bars, alcohol? Those are things nobody has to have. And if you still want to buy them, you'll pay for them. Get the taxes from there.
Speak for yourself, Rich.
Well, that's what you call.
What do you mean?
That's a caller using proper syntax.
Nobody needs the bars or the booze. What are you talking about?
It's not hard to say.
Hey, this is St. Louis, man. We're just filled with breweries.
Now, the one part of that bill that I do like is eliminating the tax on diapers. I think we're buying a lot of diapers over at our place.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, those things are expensive, man.
Yeah, because I didn't know about the thing called a diaper party until about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It's a thing.
So it's like the it's what men get for the baby shower, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
That's your baby shower as you.
Yep. We did a diaper party for my son-in-law at Topgolf. That was a lot of fun.
Well, he gets to carry all those diapers home.
Yeah, he did.
He would do all that.
Yeah, you got to have an SUV.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know, man. Diapers and at least you're not using, like, or the way it used to be, where you had to wash them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, back in when I was pooping in my pants.
The cloth?
Yeah, buddy. Absolutely.
What are you using now?
Depends.
Oh, man. Jeez. Come on.
It depends, you know, what's happening.
Wow. All right. Remember, what was the SNL sketch? Oh, oops, I crap my pants. That was before adult diapers, right? Or was it?
I think adult diapers have been around for a long time there, right?
Okay, then, they just made a whole sketch about it then, I guess. John?
Yes?
You've not been here throughout the week. Usually you come in on Friday.
Friday, yeah. Here I am on, what it was today, Tuesday?
But you've never been here at this time of day when Amy and I, because we care about the consumer,
yeah,
and we know that.
Oh, I know what you people talk about. I tune in when I can, yeah.
Well, because we care about people and how much money they have to spend for groceries and eggs every time, every day at this time, we like to bring you the egg beat. So listen to this.
Yeah.
The USDA, this is just in case you've bought eggs and are like, man, I don't want to go back out there and get more because they're expensive. I still have some in the refrigerator. Oh, no. The expiration date happened.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no. It's came and gone. Come and gone. The USDA says eggs may be refrigerated for 3 to 5 weeks from the day they are placed in the fridge.
Huh.
The sell-by date will usually expire during that time, but they will be perfectly safe to use.
Now, what happens when they're not safe to use? Like, if you let an egg sit there and it's just sitting there for, I don't know, 6-7 years. What happens when you eat that sucker? Do we know?
I would feel like an egg would would decompose in 6 or 7 years.
Well, okay, wouldn't it? Okay, let's say, you know, 3 months.
All right, 3 months.
3 months, you got an egg there, and if you crack that sucker open and fry it in the skillet, I'm sure it'd be perfectly fine.
Well, as soon as you crack it open, you're going to smell if it's not good.
Oh. But what does it do to you?
Well, probably the same thing rotten meat does to you.
Ooh. Ooh.
You don't want that.
No, I don't.
Do you know about my buddy that used to eat rotten meat?
No.
Yeah, it's true. He was on a completely raw diet.
Oh, I got a weak stomach.
Amy's heard this before.
Yeah.
He was on a raw diet for about a year. And one of the things he used to do was eat a thing called high meat.
Uh-huh.
And it was rotten meat that he would keep in a mason jar in the fridge.
Night.
Yeah, he'd let it rot for about 3 months.
Oh.
And then once a week, he would take a little marble-sized piece and eat it because the bacteria is good for your gut, he said.
That'll help you lose weight. Man, maybe that's what I ought to do.
That's what he said.
Start eating some spoiled meat out there.
I don't think you should do that.
Ugh.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.